now the talk why proprietary tool hurts your FOSS project. Free and open software things. So I'm forced to use Teams and I don't like it. And if you're developing something free, you should also have a tool that is free to talk to each other. And we will hear more about from Jan Anelli.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, so I'm going to talk about that. Like why it's needed, and especially when it's needed when you're doing free and open source software. So not in general, but in free and open source software. And my name is Jan Anelli, and you can find the slides at ina.li/y2025. There's not a ton of links, but if you want to reuse the arguments with your manager, colleagues, community, it might be nice. And it's freely licensed. So a little bit about me first, then. So why should you listen to me? So I run this consulting business called Open by Default, where I try to help organizations to be better at working in the open with open licenses and so. And my journey into this, into the open culture, started through the Wikimedia movement, who produces a lot of open knowledge, basically mostly on Wikipedia, but on a bunch of other projects as well. And what you might not know is that their entire tech stack, everything they're used in production, is open source software. And there's a very strong ethos in the developers at the Wikimedia to use open source. But the more you step away from production and developers, even within Wikimedia Foundation, who has this ethos, the more proprietary tools you will find. So even just for designers, they will use Figma slides. And this week was the Wikimania conference, which is the yearly conference for all the Wikimedia movement. They had the platform Eventyay, which is an open source platform. But for me as a remote speaker to come in, they had Zoom in the background and they streamed through YouTube. So it's sort of like when it's not in production, then it comes a little bit less important, apparently. And then I'm a maintainer of some projects in the Gov directory. I'm on the advisory committee for OpenRefine. I've been working for Foundation for Public Code, and I'm an occasional contributor to iNaturalist and OpenStreetMap. And all of these are sort of like open source initiatives in a way, projects trying to do something good, but none of them is really using open source all the way. And I'm not angry with anyone who's doing this. This talk is not a rant. Rather, it comes from a place of empathy. We know that this is really hard and that you might need good arguments to convince everyone that this might not be the best way for us. So that's where I'm going to try to take this talk, to give you some munition for that. So have that in your head all the time when I'm talking here. I'm not talking down on anyone. I might try to help you see where the harms might be, and it might not be the same for every kind of tool everywhere, but it's sort of like generalized experience that I've seen. And there is, of course, this sort of like contradiction in the entire terms. We're building open source tools. We have not chosen the license by accident, mostly. We have some sort of intention that we want this to be the case, that we want to share with the world. But somehow, then maybe we're using closed tools along the way. And these tools often, very often, come with some set of restrictions. Restrictions for you as a user of the tools, as a developer in the project, contributor to the project. It might be that you cannot export the data to do some data analysis of how your project is going. You might not be able to fork the workspaces or customize your environment. I know that when I'm really getting into something, if there's some corners that I can shave off and like make my work day a little bit easier, I'm very happy to do a little bit of extra and then gain that time later on. But if it's proprietary, that might not be an option at all. And this is shaping the culture, the tools that you're using in your ecosystem. So it might become easier to make further decisions later on if you've chosen already to use something proprietary. It's a little bit of a slippery slope. Like, well, we're already using Figma. What does it matter if we're not exporting it in a free and open file format or to a file standard that everybody can use, then can go into Penpot or Inkscape, something like that. So it makes it easy to sort of like make other convenient decisions. And it's always hardest in the beginning to argue against that you should use this tool because you haven't seen those effects yet. And there's usually never no one's intention that that's the way you're going to go. And this leads to often to some exclusion, some real. This is not just a purity test that, oh, it, we would be best if we were the most open. No, it actually leads to that some people simply can't participate. And one of the most obvious ones of these is when we're talking about actual access to the tools, because not all tools are available on all operative systems, for example, or in all environments. And while we're here in the Western Europe, we might have an idealistic choice and be proud of using Linux when we can and sort of glare at people that you're using some other operative system. But if you're in a setting where you cannot use those because you don't have the money to buy the licenses, you might be forced to use Linux. And if you're using something that requires Windows or Mac, then they cannot participate. Another similar, but also less hard to measure, this is a little bit more anecdotal, is that even though proprietary tools might be very slick and have a very smooth user experience, for some users, often they are not looking to please everyone. So they look slick, but they're not very accessible. Whereas in open source projects, we often see the other way around. They are overly accessible to the point that they don't look that nice, but they function very well. Then we have some other problems, like with how the world is shaping today, with geopolitics, with countries sanctioning each other all over because of their behavior. We saw recently organic maps where they got blocked from using GitHub because of where of one of their contributors were. We've seen similar things earlier also from Russian contributors being blocked from projects. Not because they are supporting their regime, just because they are Russians. And this also, of course, goes the other way around. I'm waiting for you to take that picture before I switch. Yes. If you are a contributor in a project or in a country, you might not feel that you are safe to provide data to a platform or a tool that might hand over that to a regime that you're not liking or that you're not feeling safe with. And this might be something, you think you're in an innocent project, you're just building an app tracking menstrual cycles. Well, in some parts of the world, that's not safe anymore. Maybe you're just doing, oh, well, this is tracking weather and on the long-term climate. Well, that's not safe everywhere either. Maybe, no, this is nothing political at all. This is just secure communication. Well, I got news for you. There are some people who don't like that at all. So that's something you need to think about. And there's some sort of kind of solution, sort of a little bit for these. You can try to self-host, because then at least you know when your data is going anywhere and what's in there. If you use open source services, you can also know how things are stored. You know, is this secure? Even if someone asks the provider that you're using the service of, they might not be able to give them the data that the regime is talking about. And then, of course, you can try to be in jurisdictions, host your things, which are friendly right now, but you never know. Over an election, that might change as well. So self-hosting and using open source is safer, but it also helps to be in better jurisdictions. And this also creates some sort of platform dependency, a lock-in, because that's the method they are using. They don't want you to leave, so they make it hard. And it also very easy to get drawn in by deals, by a tier for open source projects or for nonprofits even. I know I fell for that myself several times. So it's easy to get in there, and then it gets harder to get out. And what happens inevitably is the term that Cory Doctorow made popular, enshittification, that the provider of these tools and platform try to extract as much value as they can from you, which means that they're making worse services, but also try to make you pay for it. And if you're not paying with it with money, you might pay with it with data in some kind of ways. They try to extract more and more of that. And of course, we see platforms change their terms of service or use. You might sign up to something that you felt, oh, well, these seems like decent guys. And then one day you wake up and see, oh, now they want to use all my data for training AI or doing something else, or ship it and store it in a place that you don't like it. Luckily now, we also have the Open Terms Archive that helps track these changes for many of the bigger platforms. So it makes it a little bit easier. Another problem is, of course, when proprietary tools get sunset, when they get closed down, and you're just left hanging there. If it is an open source project, you might influence the community, you might revive the community and be a part of it to help it live on. And even if not, you might be able to fork it and have it working for yourself itself instead. And then perhaps a more subtle thing is that it creates a power imbalance in your community. Usually, corporations, players, get better advantages at this because they are the one paying for the service, which means that there's an unequal access to, for example, by them having enterprise subscriptions, which make them power users and very good at the tools. And why not? That might be an exact influence on your project, but by them being good at the tools can give them an unequal leverage. They can have some sort of like sandboxes or access quotas. And what's even more common is that they can get some training paid for by their companies, and which volunteers don't have. Whereas in open source project, there's often a lot of open educational resources. And this all is a lost opportunity. So instead of you're gaining this for yourself, you're feeding big tech and you're feeding the machine. You're feeding them by providing them with metrics and usage data so that they can keep improving, making their product even better. Sometimes you might even pay for it and feeding them with money, but what you're definitely doing is you're feeding them with clout. They are very happy advertising, saying this open source project is using our services. So instead, what you should do is to build up your ecosystem, take part of the tools that you're using, that you're depending on, and be part of that ecosystem itself. To provide the bug reports that they need to make the service better. Maybe you can even submit some patches, or if you need some new features, scratch your own itch and provide them, or talk with people, get it on the roadmap somehow. You can also improve the documentation, sometimes just for future you, because you're going to come back to this later, sometimes for other people in your community also that you're going to onboard later. You might also lose idealists, maybe not from your entire project, but from the parts that they don't feel like they want to take part in. Maybe they are not going to go into the community calls where they know that their voice and video will be harvested off somewhere else. Maybe they'll keep to the old trusted mailing list. Maybe they won't come to the chat if that's also something that's they don't know where this is stored. And they're very happy in staying out. These are usually very experienced people who know how easy it is to move the data around, and they care a lot about their freedom. But the proprietary tools, they are just so much better. Well, we're getting ourselves in some of this convenience catch-22, where instead of making the other tools better, we keep doing the proprietary tools better. So we sort of like never get the chance to catch up, where you instead could contribute to these ecosystems of tools and don't settle for the tools that you don't like. You can help improve this and break this catch-22. But everybody is already on this platform and we're using this. And I'm said X here and then just afterwards realized, well, there's actually on platform X here that we might also not want to be on sometimes. But we also know that network effects, they are not bound to last forever. We have seen social media platforms rise and fall. So you can be the one to help start that, because if you're staying on it, you're also encouraging other people to stay on it, because you provide a value to this platform by being there. And you can just start experimenting. Bridge a chat over to somewhere. There are often many tools like that. Or you can mirror the repositories also. And just start doing it. It's never the wrong time to do it. Like, it was better if you already did it yesterday, but it's better to start now than wait. And it's also not an all or nothing. That's something I really want you to take down with you here. It's not a purity test, as I said before. It is about helping your community participate and make them feel safe when they're doing it. So start with something that your community feels like, oh, yeah, this might not be an essential tool. We can start doing with that and experiment. Or maybe this is the most worrisome. If something goes wrong, we should start in that end. Talk to the people and see where you want to start and move forward from there. And there's plenty of tools out for almost everything proprietary. There's something free and open source, because other people have already felt this urge to not be dependent in that sense. So use the commons, use it with love and care. And start replacing the tools. And I'm not going to give you like this guide to, oh, switch Slack for this and so forth, because there's so many things and depends so much on what you need. There are also plenty of comparison sites, and now there's also sites with comparing things that are hosted in the EU. But here are some areas which are very mature in open source there. You probably can find something if you're using some proprietary tool for collaborative text editing. Well, you can choose if you want to just have raw text. Do you want to have markdown? Do you want to have rich text? They're open source for all of them with real-time collaboration in as well. The same with video calls, chat, and of course, the heart and soul of your project, the repository environments. So just start somewhere, because it is possible to change. And you don't have to do everything at once. You can start in one place and then check with your community that, wait, did this work? Did it not work? If it doesn't, don't be afraid to roll it back. But when you're going forward, then start with something else. Because what you're going to find is that people like when you have the intention to make it better. So radiate that intent, because change is possible. And when you do it, it's contagious. And never beat yourself up if it doesn't work. It's okay to not be perfect. That's the society we live in, but show the intention and strive for something. So in the summary here, I want to come back to where, a little bit where I started. You have chosen to use free licenses. Probably you debated very hard which exact license to use to fit your project even. And there's some value set that your community are holding since you did that. Let those values reflect in the tools that you use, because that's going to give a sense of self for the project, that you're becoming not contradictory in yourself. And while we define free and open source software through the license texts, and we point to some websites or organizations that are defining them. Open source is much more than the license in itself. It is the culture. It is the community. It is the freedom that the licenses are allowing you. So let those freedoms be the foundation for what you're building, and don't build it on something that you don't control. And I think we can take some question and answer. I think we have a few minutes still left here.
Jan. Any questions from the audience?
Hi, I work in government.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I actually try to create open source infrastructure layer for government. But we are forced to work with a lot of Microsoft stuff. Within my project, I try to keep them out. But in communicating with stakeholders, I need to use their tools. I need to be on their platforms. How to deal with that one?
It is a tricky one, because I imagine also that you're communicating with people who are also not like a central part of the project, but other stakeholders around, and they might not easily switch tools either. So it's a tricky in those kinds of situations, but where you can do is start with the things that you can change, and maybe that might be the spark for other parts of organizations to follow in, and then suddenly you're building a movement within the government. But it's very easy to ram your head into the wall to something that is impossible. So don't even try to do the things that are too hard. Change where you have some influence and leverage. All right.
Thank you, Jan.
Thank you.